Welcome to Inspiring Creative Thinking, a podcast dedicated to the exploration of human creativity. Inspiring Creative Thinking is brought to you by the Ullman Group, a marketing communications firm dedicated to helping clients create the future. I'm your host, David E. Bowman, Chief Marketing Strategist with the Ullman Group. This episode, episode 11, features a conversation about creativity with Bing Davis. Willis Bing Davis is a world-renowned artist, a respected educator, an icon of creative thinking, and one of Dayton's brightest cultural gems. Born in Greer, South Carolina, Davis grew up in Dayton, Ohio, where he lives today. Bing graduated from DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana in 1959, and he then went on to study at the Dayton Art Institute and later received his master's degree in education in 1967 from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. He has taught in a variety of educational institutions, such as Dayton Public School System, DePaul and Miami University, Wright State University, and Central State University. While at Central State, Bing also chaired the art department and was the director of the Paul Robeson Cultural and Performing Arts Center. He has also served as an artist in residence for the School of Education at the University of Dayton and as president of the board of directors of the National Conference of Artists. Bing's art has been exhibited around the world, including exhibitions at Studio Museum of Harlem, American Craft Museum, Renwick Gallery, Maryland Institute College of Art, Savannah College of Art and Design, Anacostia Museum, National Museum of Art of Senegal, West Africa, U.S. Embassy Accra, Ghana, and Museum für Angewandte Kunst, Museum of Applied Arts, Frankfurt, Germany, and the Dayton Art Institute. Bing is one of Dayton's most prominent cultural and creative ambassadors, and he is my guest on this episode of Inspiring Creative Thinking. Bing, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure to be here.
So, why does creativity matter to our world?
Well, it's significant for the development of humankind, and also anything that we're going to do and make first starts as a creative thought in someone's mind. So creativity is always there and always present and very necessary.
And in your personal world, why does creativity matter to you personally?
Well, it's a way of perceiving the world, it's a way of expressing, and it's one way to acknowledge one's whole self and one's relationship to other human beings. So creativity in art is integral to my breathing and in and out. It's just necessary.
And in discussing your work, you have said that you are concerned with taking a given medium and making a personal statement based on your perception, observations, and response to your environment. Can you elaborate a little more on this approach to creativity and to your work and what that statement means?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. What it basically means is that I'm very conscious that there's some technique, processes, principles, and elements to learn and inquire, but once you know those, you do not let those be the guiding force. And so I put more emphasis on how I use that information in a creative and improvisational way, more so than a structured mathematical way where it's stiff and not alive. And so I really was speaking to the fact that in the process of working, I'm continually listening to myself, the materials, and the concept, so that it becomes a symphony of me working mentally and creatively at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's almost as if I'm understanding you correctly, maybe there's a need to understand fundamental basic principles and rules, but once you understand them, there's not necessarily a need to follow them.
No, as a matter of fact, you're conscious of them, but you don't let them control your thinking and your thoughts and your expression. Otherwise, this can remain stiff and there's no life to what you express. But if when you just let it flow through, the knowledge that you've acquired is there, and you can tap into it when you need it. And you can therefore switch on both sides of the brains very fluidly.
One of the things I've seen you do with some of your artwork is take things that other people have not seen value in or things that people have discarded and put those things together in a new way and with other elements to make something just simply beautiful. Could you talk about that as sort of an approach to creativity, if you would?
I certainly would. That's the important part. I'm glad you observed that, because what it goes back to is being able to see rather than just look. Everybody, if you don't have physical damage, you can see something. But the artist, the creative person, has to really see it in a new and interesting way, contrary to how it may appear. And that goes with things that are already in the natural world or things that are man-made. They have a particular purpose, but if you're fluid and in your thinking and in your imagination, you can also see other options and possibilities within that. And everything has a potential and energy. And so when I reuse something, I'm tapping into its previous use and giving it additional use by having it become a new way of looking or thinking or expressing. So I enjoy that, and just one of those exercises and ways of keeping oneself fresh and open, because as a human being, we take information in through our five senses. And as Picasso says, as an artist, we spend all of our life being childlike without being childish. And that means just taking that inquisitive approach to things. And as a result, you're going to always be discovering something new, even in the old.
Not only are you an artist, you're also an accomplished teacher, which is an incredibly incredibly important and I think sadly undervalued profession these days. You have a quote on your website that says, when you were teaching, that you stopped teaching art and began teaching people. And I thought that was just beautiful.
You know, that's wild. You know, that was 1966, and that has followed me all my life. People often ask what I meant by that. What I found as I began to develop as an artist is that art and culture is integral to all people and all cultures, and that the arts can become a tool for understanding self and others, and that I was never interested in duplicating and making another Picasso or Romare Bearden or Jacob Lawrence. I was interested in using the arts to enrich the lives of people and make them be the best they can be, and art just became a tool for learning and exploring. Because each of us has a particular gift down inside of us, and if we can find that gift and turn that into a career, we're going to be very, very happy. And the arts can be an avenue for exploration of self, the world around us, and others. And so I just made art become more than just a pretty painting you hang on the wall or you set on a pedestal. And as a result, it takes it out of that elitist standpoint and makes it a common thing for all human beings.
Yeah, and I think so many people think of, you know, creativity solely as what you do professionally, which is, you know, making works of art. But in that statement in and of itself, you know, some of the value of art is how do you develop innovative new ideas, whether you're an accountant or a software developer. And it's that learning to think differently, or, you know, take things that others have discarded, put them with other ideas and make something.
You hit it right on the head. The arts has that energy, power, and potential, and what we have to do is to share that with our community so they can realize that they, too, can look at the world with fresh eyes. They, too, can express themselves in a way that is unique to them, and that it has value and validity. The arts are just powerful, and the creative aspect. You know, one thing that I don't talk about that when I'm teaching, but I've come to learn that there's something happening when you take and provide an opportunity for someone to have a creative experience. And in the classroom situation or in the school situation or in the studio situation, when that person is discovering those new ways of seeing and thinking and expressing, there's five things happening inside the body we don't see. It's critical thinking, creative problem solving, fluency of thought, which is high use of imagination, and then instrumental behavior to solve a problem. You're going to decide what size it's going to be, what materials you're going to, all those are decisions. And then all along the road, assessment and evaluation, five elements that anyone needs to be successful. And it happens naturally when you're involved in the arts.
Yeah, and I think it's such just a great way to expand your mind or change your way of thinking and approaching problems.
Exactly. And you hit it right on the head. It's an approach. And as a result, you make that a way of life. And so you carry that way approach when you meet new people, new situations, or when you got to fix the roof of the basement. Well, let me think, how am I going to do this? What am I going to need? So it becomes a way of just being. It doesn't just happen when you're in the studio in front of the canvas, but it becomes all-encompassing. And as a result, it led me to tell my son, I've never had a job. What do you mean? It's always been art. It's not a job. It's a way of being and expressing. And as a result, it's a tremendous joy. So I feel fortunate to have been able to be guided to the point that I can tap into my creativity and let that become an integral part of my being.
One of the things people talk about with creativity and the creative process is the idea of flow. And sort of being lost in that moment. And then, you know, ideally you want to find things you love to do and incorporate that. People in sports often talk about that too. I know some people might know you were quite the basketball player in your youth, which I learned at the Dayton Art Institute one day. But can you talk about that flow process and how that relates into your work creatively?
Yeah, I can, because every artist, every creative person seeks that. It's the mystery part of art, because I've asked mentors and heroes of mine in the arts about that too, and it comes down to the fact that we seek that. It's when you saw Jordan raise his hands after making four straight, because he didn't know how he made it. Or you see the person standing at the high jump post and he's just visualizing himself going through. He see himself going over that bar before he does it. The flow is that is that time when all things are working. And when I talk with colleagues and friends of mine who I admired about that flow, how do you know when it's going? How do you get it? It's a mystery. And to the one, they said, well, when that flow is there, you got all that academic knowledge, all that training, but when that flow comes, you're only a vessel. It's flowing through you. You don't have any more control over that than you do the wind and the rain. But you seek that. And when that's happening, you can be working, you forget you're hungry, you forget you're tired, you forget the time has gone by, and now it's dark and it's time to clean up and go home. It's just that point when the whole, everything is working inside and outside of you, and that you just are going with it. I see it very simply when I'm working, is that in the process of working, I seek that flow. I seek that flow. And when that flow comes, I flow with it. And that's the reason I say the piece will tell me when it's finished, is that I'm in tune with the work. And if I accept that and learn to trust my judgments and my feelings, I'll know where I'm to go next and what I'm to do. And when it happens, I have no way of knowing how to turn it on or how to turn it off. It's just that wonderful, wonderful human time when you're at peace and at one with the universe. I had to be careful about talking about that, because sometime my wife might say, I think you love art more than you love me. I said, no, it's just that, because sometimes you have the same kind of feeling. Your body is just, it's a wonderful state of being. It's a wonderful state of being. It's also I think your body's releasing those good feelings inside too. And you don't, that's the magic part. That's the magic part. You can learn perspective and color theories and all those techniques and comments that we learned in the classroom. And then you try to put them together. That's when we say, once you learn them, you don't forget them, they're there, but you don't want them to block that flow by overthinking, overdoing, and particularly the practical side, because you got to allow that childlike side to be there. And then the main thing is not fearing it. Some people fear, because I don't have control. I want to make this thing look just like I thought. Let it flow. Let it flow, because it's actually going to be better than you trying to force it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that period of time, and many people have it. Mathematicians playing with those figures and numbers, when they get into that, solving those problems, they say eureka, in other words, but it's that flow, and you don't know when it's going to come, where it's going to come, but there's things you can do to get it. For example, when you have creative blocks, you know, some people need to go off by themselves and sit by running water, or you have a field that you go to, and you try to bring, or you take a walk on the sand and you try to get that flow coming back in. There's things you can do to try to prepare yourself for it, but you don't have any control over it. You feel a vessel, and you feel blessed to be a used vessel that flows through.
I think, you're talking about sort of knowing the rules and knowing the fundamentals, but then being willing to kind of throw that away. I think of a great story of Miles Davis in the recording of Kind of Blue. And obviously, with John Coltrane and his fabulous group of musicians, but he just basically walked in and said, here's the chords, go. And, it wasn't, hey, we did 35 takes. It was, they played and they hit record and pow, there's flow on display like never before, maybe never again.
You're right, and I just heard a classic example right out of our Dayton community, too, with the passing of the great voice, Leroy Sugar Bonner, the lead singer of the Ohio Players. There's been a lot of discussion about that group and its tremendous success. And I just recently learned that that's how they went into the studio to make all those wonderful gold records. They went in with no written down music and just went into the studio all night, and the hits came out from the flow. Didn't have a thing written down. And then, yeah. As a matter of fact, one of the producers, you got some recording time. You got about 45 pieces you could possibly draw from. Oh, so yeah, we're ready. We got everything down. They just went into the studio and waited for the flow.
Yeah, with the confidence. That
with the confidence,
if they showed up, it
would. Yeah. They had the instruments, and somebody would come up something, they'd add something to it. But yeah, that flow is tremendous, and it's one of the beautiful parts of the creative process.
What moved you to make your living or dedicate your life to creativity?
That's a good point. I've said often as I go around the country and talking with young developing artists and young people in the classroom situation, I made a commitment in the fifth grade when Miss Joffe, my fifth grade teacher, had everybody stand up one at a time to profess to the class what you want to be when you grow up. And I had enough nerve at that time and enough success and confidence that I could say, I want to be an artist when I grow up. And I took the ribbon from my buddies and friends. But when I reflected back on it, I realized that when I was making things out there on the sidewalk or I was playing by myself and just doodling and sketching and making things, I was aware I was tremendously happy. And I was aware of that flow. I couldn't articulate what it was, but I liked that. And I knew that somehow I was going to have to be involved because I wanted to be happy. I wanted to be full and complete, and art gave me that. So I made a commitment early, and it was totally based on the fact that how I felt when I was making art. I felt the most complete and the most human is when I was making things. And so that nurtured me and guided me, as well as the external encouragement from friends, family, and friends.
Yeah. One of the things you even talked about in fifth grade, you said you wanted to be an artist and ridiculed. And one of the things I think that people who are creative or want to be creative struggle with is the critic or the fear of the critic.
Oh, yeah.
How do you deal with, clearly anybody that does anything great, somebody's not going to like it. How do you deal with criticism and just overcoming that?
Well, several ways. I deal with it differently now than I did earlier, but I had a tremendous amount of self-confidence, and even though I was courteous and respectful and not to speak bad to people or certainly authority figures, inside myself I could say, I'm still going to be an artist, I had that conflict, and growing up too, because as I was playing athletics, I got teased from my teammates too. What are you doing? That little pencil and paper. You don't use big muscles to do that. But somehow I had enough external nurturing support and enough internal conviction that, in spite of that, and then even in terms of the economic factor, growing up poor and half the time on welfare, even as an athlete, money was never a goal or a factor. And so why let it be a motivating factor now? Be myself, be humble, and be what I feel like that I'm at best at, and that's being a creative person. And so I can articulate now that I had to go through and carefully analyze the difference between a want and a need. And I realized that I didn't need a lot. I need a little bit of food, a little bit of clothing, a little bit of shelter, a little bit of love. and all those other things, society says, you're nothing if you don't wear this. You're nothing if you don't live here. You're nothing if you don't have this much. But those were external factors. But inside, I didn't have many needs. And so money and fame has never been in the equation anywhere. It was just being myself and being happy and doing what I enjoyed doing. And that's been a driving force. And I found that some of those other things come in the process, but you don't worry about them or let them become part of your goal.
What do you think is the biggest obstacle people have to overcome in terms of being creative?
Well, we've talked about it indirectly, and that's the external criticism, particularly from loved ones, because sometimes even those loved ones love us so much they don't want us to have to struggle. And so they'll say, well, you're good and fun, but now it's time to get a real job. You know, you got to get a real job. But they don't want us to go to that starving artist mythology, is that you either make it or teach it, and if you don't do those two. That's what we spend a lot of times now sharing with young people who have that creative drive in the arts, that we've identified 206 different career options, if you'd like. You don't have to just teach it or make it, but there's other ways to apply that. But that's been the approach. Yeah.
Where do you find creative inspiration?
Everywhere. The natural world. You know, I look outside. I see things. I see shapes. I see colors. I hear sounds. Even the cars going by now are making patterns and rhythms as they go by. Some of them soft and delicate, and some of them very. And so I'm like a sponge, and having prepared myself to be a receiver, so it can be direct. You know, like I may spend some time going out and visiting a tree I've never met, you know, and I see the variations of the trunks of the tree and the barks of the tree, and I'm storing that information, and I'm experiencing it, and in the process of experience is a direct joy, but all that has become reservoir that I can tap whenever I need to pull that up to